This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. With the Democrats having won a majority of seats in the House, Nancy Pelosi is poised to become the Speaker of the House, taking the gavel from Dennis Hastert. Joining us on the phone is Mark Sandalow, who's Washington Bureau Chief for a paper published in Pelosi's district, the San Francisco Chronicle. He's covered her for 13 of the 19 years she served in Congress. Mark Sandalow, welcome to Fresh Air. Let's start with the basics. What powers will Nancy Pelosi have, assuming she becomes the first woman to be Speaker of the House?
Speaker of the House is the number one position in the House of Representatives, and unlike any of the other offices, minority leader, majority leader, the whip positions, you're Speaker of the entire House. You don't just have jurisdiction over your own party. So there's some ceremonial duties, swearing in new members and calling the House to order. But really what you are the titular head of the legislative branch, of the lower body of the legislative branch. And, of course, you are in the Constitution, third in the line of succession to the presidency. This is a position that no woman has even approached before in the history of American politics.
As you put it in one of your articles, she was portrayed by some Republicans during this election as a liberal boogeyman. Give us some examples of how she was portrayed.
Republicans have portrayed San Francisco values as something that voters should be scared of. And when you ask them, what are San Francisco values? They mean everything from the alternative lifestyles, you know, the numbers of gays and lesbians in San Francisco, to the left-wing politics. I mean, the city of San Francisco, the Board of Supervisors has voted to impeach President Bush. The city was the one that started grape boycotts back in the 1970s. The city was the first city to have domestic partnerships and smoking bans and all sorts of progressive legislation. So Republicans have tried to scare voters into thinking that if Nancy Pelosi takes over, then these will be the values that she will try to impose, as they said in the campaign, in every district in America.
How is she seen in her district?
Pelosi has won election overwhelmingly in each of her, I think it's now 10 re-election bids. She typically wins with 80 to 85% of the vote. What people in Washington have a hard time understanding, though, is that there is a strong opposition to Pelosi, which comes from the left. An awful lot of Pelosi's constituents would like to see her take a very bold, progressive stance on issues like cutting off funding to the Pentagon if the United States doesn't pull out of Iraq, investigating the president with an eye towards maybe circulating articles of impeachment, advancing proposals to expand health care, universal health care, to all Americans. I think Pelosi understands, though, that she owes her majority in a large part due to the election of a number of conservative and moderate Democrats. These are not necessarily people from New York City or from San Francisco or Los Angeles, but people from southern Indiana, people from the more moderate suburbs of Philadelphia, people from Connecticut. These are people who won in Tuesday's election, who have a very, very hard time winning re-election in 2008 if the Democrats pursue that sort of liberal agenda. Pelosi has an eye towards a much more modest agenda to try to build the majority.
And she has said that she would not seek any kind of impeachment hearings against the president.
She said it's off the table. Now, there are a lot of Republicans who had suspicions that she said that to appear more moderate until Election Day, and now she will change course. But, Pelosi, her attitude on this is, even if impeachment were the correct course, and, you know, in San Francisco, an awful lot of her constituents think it is, it's simply not worth the time that would be spent on it over the next 2 years. What do you get out of an impeachment hearing, even if it were successful, which most people think it certainly wouldn't be, even if the Senate were to convict President Bush and throw him out of office, it would take a year. You cut a year off of the Bush presidency, and you replace him with the President Cheney. So I think that Nancy Pelosi just sees as a non-starter that she doesn't want to waste her time on.
Tell us a little bit about her political career and her career in general before she became a congresswoman. For instance, I mean, her father and brother were both mayor of Baltimore. So what was her career like before she was elected to Congress?
Yeah, Pelosi was very much a mother for the younger portion of her life. She raised five children in 6 years, and never really thought about running for elected office until she was in her mid-40s. But that said, she's always been very involved in volunteering in the Democratic Party. Her dad, when she was born, was a member of Congress from Baltimore, went on to become mayor. Her older brother was mayor of Baltimore. She lived and breathed Democratic politics her entire life. She moved across coast with her husband, Paul Pelosi, and began volunteering with the Democratic Party in California. When the seat in San Francisco for Congress became open, she seized it. She was already 47 years old by the time she first ran for Congress. And she's often said one of the reasons it's very difficult for women to advance in the House of Representatives and the Senate is because many women spend the early part of their lives raising families. By the time they get to Washington, they're already middle-aged. And if you're working on a seniority system, by the time they get in the position to assume the levers of power, many of them are already too old. Pelosi worked extraordinarily fast at a very fast pace, and in the 19 years she's gone from being the elected representative of San Francisco to what will soon be Speaker of the House.
What have her tactics been as House Minority Leader?
To be a powerful leader on Capitol Hill, there are all sorts of different techniques, and you know, Sam Rayburn used to yell at people and make their collars wilt, is what members tell me. And, you know, there are people like Jim Wright who used to tower over people. Well, Pelosi, as a woman, is not physically intimidating to people, but she can be very much a stern taskmaster. Her staff talks about when she uses her mother of five voice, and it's not a voice that they look forward to. Pelosi has been very strict in terms of party discipline. Her strategy when she came in 4 years ago as a Democratic leader is that Democrats must stay together. And by staying together, she hoped to force moderate Republicans to make votes with their party's leadership that could get them in trouble come election time. So Pelosi told her members who didn't always want to vote with the party, look, we need you. And in fact, she started to punish people who didn't vote consistently with the party, at times telling them they were in danger of losing their committee assignments, they might not get as much money from the Democratic committees for re-election if they didn't stay in line. So it was a very, very disciplined operation. And according to Congressional Quarterly, Democrats have voted more united the last 2 years than they ever have before in the past. So it's been a very united Democratic Party under Pelosi. And, of course, that in part makes enemies of people because there are some folks who don't want to vote with the Democratic Party, even though it's their party, all the time. So she has some enemies out there. But, boy, I'll tell you, now that she's brought the Democrats back into the majority, she's a very, very popular leader.
How does Nancy Pelosi get along with President Bush?
See, Pelosi has called President Bush incompetent. She said that in order to make decisions, you have to have both experience and judgment, and this president has neither. On the flip side, President Bush has made Nancy Pelosi the butt of his jokes in the closing months of his campaign and watched his party vilify her as being the personification of liberal craziness. So the two of them on a personal level don't really get along very well at all. That said, I think both of them understand that there are things that they can accomplish together. I mean, you look at their attitudes on immigration reform. Nancy Pelosi was a supporter of a comprehensive immigration plan, which is not that much different than what President Bush supported. With Republicans now losing in the House, immigration reform is probably a bigger probability than it was before. You could make the argument that even a balanced budget is more likely than it was before, as you have the Democrats refusing to extend President Bush's tax cuts, and you'll have the president with his veto pen probably standing in the way of any Democratic spending proposals. The idea that the two parties need to get along to get something done may be wrong. Things could get done despite the fact that the two of them have mutual disdain.
Any other kind of insights you have as a reporter from Nancy Pelosi's home city?
People watch Nancy Pelosi on television, and she can at times be an inarticulate speaker, and they wonder, how does somebody like that, how does a liberal become the leader and the Speaker of the House of Representatives? And I think what people miss is what got her to where she is today. The reason that Pelosi was leader of the Democrats and is poised to become Speaker of the House is because she is a very, very skilled tactician. She is a political operator who came up through the Democratic Party in California. She was the party chairwoman in California. She knows where her members, the members of the House of Representatives, need to be on votes, on committees, on pieces of legislation to win them re-election, and she is very hands-on involved with that. When the camera goes on, people sometimes expect someone to articulate a Democratic vision. That's not going to be Nancy Pelosi's skill. Nancy Pelosi's skill is going to be putting Democrats legislatively or parliamentary-wise in the place they need to be to advance what she will see as their set of priorities.
Mark Sandalo, thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry.
Mark Sandalo is Washington Bureau Chief for the San Francisco Chronicle.